You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. Brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the world's finest bookmaker, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. To celebrate the launch of Nick Luck Daily, Fitzdares have a special sign-up offer that will double your winnings on your first bet up to a £50 stake. Just go to www.fitzdares.com/luck to sign up. Hi, welcome to the show, bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the racing world every weekday. It's our final show of the week, Friday, September the 18th. It's a glorious sunny afternoon, lots of good racing to look forward to in Great Britain. Ayr, Newbury, Catterick, Kempton in Ireland at Downpatrick and Dundalk, and a busy weekend in prospect as well. But for how long? I wish my own mood could be as sunny as conditions outside, because I and you, I'm sure, woke this morning to the news that Chris Whitty, and this had been flagged up in briefings the last couple of days, who is the chief medical officer for England and the chief medical advisor to the UK government, the chief scientific advisor, and a man who has been all over the news since the coronavirus pandemic began. He is advising the government that a short period of lockdown, a two-week period of lockdown that he's calling a circuit break, might be the way forward to stem the rising infection rate and the R rate here in Great Britain. And clearly, given the fact that all we've been doing is talking about how we get spectators back to race courses over the last few weeks, now, 24 hours on from the last discussion we had on that, we simply have to focus on if that happens, if a lockdown happens, a second lockdown, can the sport continue at all? And if it does, in what form? So the first call I made today was to the Chief Regulatory Officer of the British Horse Racing Authority, Brant Dunshay, and I started by asking Brant, if we go into second lockdown, how well equipped are we to continue?
Thanks, Nick. I believe we are well placed to continue. We had always in our planning anticipated that there would be a period where the virus may increase again, and have been planning accordingly. So shortly, or immediately after we had to deal with the local lockdown in the Leicester area, and it became evident that government were devolving the responsibility for administering local lockdowns to local authorities. We learnt a lot from that experience, and we worked together with the industry to establish what we called a local lockdown protocol. And that brings together a representative from the various stakeholder groups across the industry to set out a process for us in the event that a local lockdown is announced, and for us to then work through a series of steps to consider what's been implemented, engage with local health authorities, and in turn work with the racecourses, local engagement groups, to ensure that we were able to make decisions in a timely fashion, satisfy the relevant authorities and government that we are cognizant of, you know, what the situation is in the local environment, and then be able to demonstrate that our behind closed doors procedures can protect not only the people attending the fixture, but also the broader local community if it's in an area where there's a local lockdown. So I'm very confident that the processes we've applied since the beginning of the resumption of racing have demonstrated that we do have a very robust set of protocols in place.
If it's a national lockdown, if it's an England-wide lockdown, you're still confident that those protocols would enable continuation of horse racing?
We are as confident as we can be. We have had very positive engagement. The BHA have had very positive engagement with central government around the protocols we've put in place. And I think that has held us in very good stead for any advocating and arguing any case for us to continue into the immediate future. And I think racing collaboratively across the stakeholder participant groups have done an outstanding job in showing what can be achieved to ensure our sport continues behind closed doors.
Brant, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Nick.
My thanks to Brant Dunshea, who was speaking just before 8 o'clock this morning, Friday, September the 18th. Rishi Prasad joins me today on the podcast. Rishi, your reaction to Brant and your overall feeling on how prepared the sport might be for a second lockdown circuit breaker, call it what you want.
Nick, good morning. Yes. Well, we know for a start that the R rate is up. Hospitals are busier. They're getting closer to capacity. But as you say, for the sport of horse racing and indeed for the country as a whole, it's a very precarious time. I think it's important to acknowledge what Brant Dunshea has done and what the BHA have done, that when racing resumed in early June, we did so whilst there was still a nationwide lockdown in place. As the restrictions were gradually eased through lockdown, racing was able to continue. And obviously other measures were introduced to allow the racing experience to get better because of the work that the BHA did, notably the return of owners. But we have been operating within lockdown. And of course, when Leicester became one of the first places to go into local lockdown, I think a lot of people call for the BHA to cancel the fixture at Leicester Racecourse. The BHA held firm. They had the belief that the protocols and measures that they'd put in place were stringent enough to ensure that the racecourse was a very safe environment in which to operate. And we know that the BHA comes in for tremendous criticism, cynical criticism at times, but the assured, I think, and confident manner that they handled that specific situation has put the sport as a whole in a very strong position to continue, even if we do see the dreaded second lockdown, or however you want to describe it, that looks to be on the horizon.
And of course, we focus so much of our energy, including on this podcast, through the last 3, 4, 5 weeks on whether spectators can return to the racecourse, the trial events, which have had their trials and tribulations. In point of fact, now we just need to concentrate on keeping the show on the road. Do we need to start walking again before we try and run?
This has been an issue, I think, from the start of it. People have been pushing and pushing and pushing. And I think the BHA have maintained their priorities in the right order from the time they start. And this is where I think they ought to take a pat on the back. The most important thing that they did was ensure that the racecourse was a very safe environment in which to operate. Therefore, even if there are lockdowns, even if there are more measures being put in place by the government, if racing can continue in the toughest of situations where the R rate is rising and hospital admissions are going up, etc., then at least it allows for our industry to continue, which is extremely important, not just for a psychological well-being point of view, but for a financial, economic point of view, where people can continue to earn a living, the sport can continue. We know over the last 6 months, Nick, how precarious times have been for individuals within the sport. People are dropping out. People are being financially hit pretty hard. Big owners, as you revealed with John Dance, someone like him is being hit hard. So it's the sort of time where anything that the BHA can do to hold our ground, to hold racing's ground, I think needs to be applauded. And I think that they've done things with regard to this specific situation really, really well.
Just moving on to the spectator issue, as we speak, as things stand, now this could all change later today, tomorrow, whenever the Prime Minister and Chris Whitty make some sort of announcement, there are going to be spectators on 3 days of the Cambridgeshire meeting next week, as there are at Warwick on Monday. Now, even if we enter some period of circuit breaking or national lockdown, call it whatever you want, if those go ahead without a hitch, does the sport need to then still be applying pressure to try and roll that out from October the 1st? Or is that a prospect that is simply receding as a function of the national situation or the national mood? Those two things not being quite the same thing.
I think that the sport needs to continue as if we were continuing to progress, as opposed to we're continuing until we get a point where we reach a point where we go, okay, we have to pull up stumps and walk in. I think we have to carry on in the manner that we intend for the sport to improve the situation on the racecourse. So I think we have to go ahead with the trials unless there is guidance. And this is what it always comes back to. Unless there is guidance from the government that you can or cannot do something, I think we have to proceed with the plans that are already in place, and the trials at Newmarket and at Warwick are in place. And unless something happens, either nationwide or indeed localised to those areas, then I think we have to go ahead. If we don't, and we start protecting ourselves for the future to the extent where we don't look to improve the situation, then we're putting ourselves even further behind the eight ball.
Talk about other news, Rishi, and we've been monitoring the Phoenix Thoroughbred situation on this podcast. It was a week ago that I tried to take you through the nuances of how the BHA and Phoenix were interacting with one another as regards to not allowing Phoenix Thoroughbreds to have entries anymore in the UK, or in Great Britain, I should say. This has taken an interesting further dimension over the last 24 hours. Just put some meat on the bones for me.
Yeah, interestingly enough, having made the decision, Phoenix, to exit British Racing, and the BHA not permitting entries to be made by Phoenix Thoroughbreds in the UK, there was an entry made from Fozzie Stack Stable in Ireland for a horse called Back to Brussels to race, I believe, at Ayr on Friday. The BHA don't have jurisdiction for international entries, so entries from Ireland to be made for racing here. So there was that very awkward situation where it was possible that they may have to take action. And I believe, this is what we are being told, that Phoenix Thoroughbreds and the BHA have had a conversation post that entry, and they won't, that entry won't be taken up. The BHA won't be permitting that horse to run, and Phoenix, I think, are happy with that situation. Because at the moment, Phoenix Thoroughbreds and the BHA are, and again, we are only going by what they're telling us, they're in a constant conversation, making things clear between both parties. I'm slightly surprised that this happened anyway, considering the news of the last week. I thought Phoenix would probably have given their trainers some sort of notification that no entries are to be made in Britain. But perhaps that was just an oversight, and that will be corrected. What I'd love to know is, this situation with Phoenix has been going on for some time, Nick, and you and I have spoken about it. We've spoken about it on the podcast. But the BHA have obviously taken their moves at a time that they thought was particularly pertinent to the situation. And I want to know, I'd love to know, what was the trigger for making the announcement as they did last week? And what was the reason for them at that point, at that juncture of the unfolding story, to say, fine, we're putting a halt to Phoenix accounts, we're going to suspend their accounts in Britain? I guess that's something that's still to be revealed, and hopefully in the long run we'll find out.
I think you'd have to make a fair assumption that because other jurisdictions, most notably France, had suspended Phoenix, that may well have triggered or put out a red flag as far as Phoenix's runners were concerned in Great Britain. And I think it's the BHA's administration system essentially needing to be assured of the provenance of Phoenix's funds, and that's why they've had to sort of work with rather than push back hard in terms of a fit and proper persons inquiry.
Yeah, and in fairness, the BHA said it is a temporary suspension on their runners. So perhaps after the review that's currently being conducted, or we believe that's being conducted at the moment, then things may change. But again, all to be revealed for people like us who are on the outside watching in.
Well, it is, of course, the Ayr Gold Cup, so that horse Back to Brussels can't run at Ayr. Ayr Western Meeting is the feature in Great Britain this weekend, sharing top billing Saturday with Newbury, a man who has a leading fancy in both the Ayr Gold Cup and the feature race at Newbury, the Millre Stakes, is Richard Fahey, and I've been speaking to him.
Yeah, well, Mr. Lupton bounced back to form in Ireland last weekend, 6 days ago, so it was always a worry coming back after 6 days, especially travelling to Ireland, but he seems to have taken everything great. We've dripped him and done everything we can to make his recovery a lot quicker. But he seems happy. He's had a couple of canters, and we're happy to let him take his chance.
He's been an amazing old horse. He just lost his form a tiny bit at the beginning of this season. What's been the key to getting him back?
We've sort of ridden him a little bit different last twice. He's running all the top handicaps, which sprint handicaps, as you know, you need a bit of luck. But we've sort of ridden him a bit more forward his last two runs. He's a horse that we used to drop in, and I think as he's got older, when we drop him in, he decides that he's not going. So as I say, we've been a little bit more aggressive in the way we've ridden him, and it seems to have turned his form round. But plus, he's dropped down, Nick, down in the weights. He was a Group 2 winner last year, which made it tough for him after to carry a Group 2 penalty. So you say, you know, you can say he's lost his way a little bit, but it was a tough ask carrying a Group 2 penalty. So the handicapper did relent a little bit, and at the age of 7, he gladly won the other day in Ireland, which was a good race to win, and it'd be great to win this.
You've got Rhythm Master as well. He's an 11-4 shot at the moment for the Mill Reef Stakes. He's the one with the Group 1 form. How do you rate his chance?
He's a big, scrawby horse with plenty of natural ability. It was a first for me from maiden into a Group 1. It's not a route I would normally take. So, as you can imagine, we hold him in quite high esteem. Just at in France, he got quite upset before the race and the preliminaries and himself a bit excited, just hoping that was a immature behaviour by him. He was quite cold in the preliminaries, and that's not him. He's quite a gentle horse, so a little bit disappointed. Sounds silly, disappointed, placed in a Group 1, but I was a fraction disappointed with that run. But let's hope we can see the real Rhythm Master on Saturday.
Richard, thanks for your time and best of luck.
Enjoy your day.
But now it's time for our weekly look at the Global Horse Rankings in association with Thoroughbred Racing Commentary, our friends and partners. And the top 10 this week at Pop Pickers is as follows. One for the teenagers and the ones in Britain as well. 10 is Beauty Generation, unchanged. 9, Batash, no change for the world's fastest racehorse. 8, the Kentucky Derby runner-up, Tis the Law, unmoved. 7, Stradivarius is down 2 after his defeat in France. Almond Eye is steady at 6. Love is up 1 at 5. 4, Gayat is down 2 after defeat to Magical, who climbs 1 to 3. Maximum Security is up 1 at 2, and Enable still atop the pile with 1,385 points as she heads for her swan song in the Arc. James Willoughby is here with me once again. And James, if anyone is starting to throw rotten fruit now, it is because Magical has found herself above Gayath. But that's why these are rankings and not ratings.
Hi, Nick. Yeah, this is a fantastic week of world racing, wasn't it? And yeah, this conundrum is exactly why we started off rankings. We felt that there was a deficiency in simply ranking rating horses on their best effort. So when Gayath, for example, has earned a figure of 130 previously, it seems to, in many cases, it leaves a horse invulnerable to ever having that revised. Obviously, there is a technique called back handicapping. But the question for everyone thinking about this is who would they rank in order? Magical above Gayath or Gayath above Magical? I'll tell you the principles for our rankings are based on a strict mathematical hierarchy. And our principles are that Gayath, his recent form, is a spike above the level that he appeared to set for himself last year. And around ratings has to be this uncertainty, because ratings are only an estimate of ability. And Gayath's recent effort now has been, he's lost confidence in how good he is, for he's met a highly ranked foe in Magical and been beaten on the square. So the last piece of evidence is that Magical beat Gayath. No excuses for either at all. Both had their chances. And now in her last 7 starts, Magical has won 5 Group 1s, been second to Gayath previously at York, and then being 5th in the Arc. And in his last 7 group races, Gayath has also won 5 Grade 1s, Group 1s. He's been 10th in the Arc and now 2nd to Magical. So you can see they've got very similar CVs of late. But Magical earns the nod mathematically on our rankings simply because the recency, the most recent piece of evidence was that she defeated Gayath, irrespective of how ratings, that's the conventional way of assessing horses, had pegged Gayath's previous efforts. On rankings, which is the principled hierarchy of other sports like golf, we're happy to have Magical above Gayath.
And the point to note here is that these rankings, as you say, they provide a counterbalance to recency bias. They're also telling you which horse has a greater degree of reliability and longevity, I suppose.
Yeah, remember, we're collecting these longitudinally. This is, we've been ranking horses like this since 2014, and it gives us a precious resource, the ability to trace the trajectory of a horse's ability over multiple seasons and compare horses all around the world in a very objective way to one another. And we're doing so not just because of their best days, but their whole body of work. And this is vital for many reasons. It gives us a better way to assess stallions, for example. Uh-huh. And the whole thing is based on objectivity. It's not based on what someone sits down and how impressed they were. A human handicapper may well be overcome, however strict he adheres to the mathematics or the pseudoscience of handicapping, he still is a human. And the advantage of using a computer to carry out these is the computer is not biased in the same way. And a computer can ask tens of millions of questions about how horses around the world compare to one another. It can constantly revise its assessments, just like they do in golf. And that gives us a rolling assessment of the top 500 horses in the world, which you can find every week updated on thoroughbredracing.com.
And you talk about stallions, which leads me neatly into Galileo reclaiming his place at the top of the sire rankings. Now, it's fair to say, James, that because of human emotions being expressed, you've had plenty of brickbats chucked in your direction for Dubawi's position at number one for much of the last year or so. You must take a bit of satisfaction now, because the objectivity that you talk about has put Galileo on top. This is nothing to do with your personal opinion or bias or predilection towards Dubawi. It is simply results that have forced Galileo back to the top.
Yes, I stopped trying to impress the court of public opinion during my days as a journalist. Galileo was already a clear number one in our turf-only rankings. But after a stellar weekend to which you refer, in which he was responsible for those four Group 1 winners, he now returns to number one in our overall rankings. And the reason he wasn't there to begin with is that A, Dubawi's horses, his representatives, his runners, had beaten Galileo in two-thirds of their encounters for a period over a couple of years, in which Galileo's strike rate in major races around the world definitely declined. And also, so Dubawi has an outstanding record in dirt races. And I think people in this part of the world think that European classic winners basically are all you need to define the relative merits of horses. But in other parts of the world, they have different opinions on that. And dirt racing is just as significant as an environment. And in Dubai, Dubawi has an absolutely outstanding record. Dirt runners. It's one reason, actually, where it would be, I think Gayath would be a very, very interesting runner in the Breeders' Cup Classic for that reason.
And I think you and I and others have tried to put that case to the trainer. But the last time he spoke to us on this podcast, he wasn't going to bite as regards the Breeders' Cup Classic, because he certainly got the right run style for the race. On that point, I wanted to mention Uncle Mo, because I saw a quote earlier in the week saying the one thing missing on his CV was a really good turf horse in Europe. And that piqued my interest. I thought, well, why would it matter to Americans that this horse, who's been such a brilliant dirt stallion, needs a decent European turf horse? But it applies to the same principle, doesn't it? Stallions have to prove that they've got another string to their bow, like Dubawi has.
Yeah, that's very fair. Uncle Mo's career is very oriented towards dirt. And I think the thing is that European middle distance racing in particular, from 9 furlongs upwards, is unquestionably the hotbed around the world. And I think that it's good for a stallion to obviously have a portfolio in which he's produced runners that have excelled where the domain in which they are winning is the hotbed. And yeah, I think it doesn't so much matter to us that Uncle Mo does that. We have him number 14 in the world. He's produced some cracking horses, most notably across the Kentucky Derby winner Nyquist. And his career has definitely shown a revival in the last 12 months. We were really bearish on him for a couple of seasons, but he's having a good campaign this year.
James, thanks so much for your time. I'm looking forward to next week, to the ARC, to the Champion Stakes, to the Breeders' Cup, and how this top 10 might all be shook up by the end of 2020. Thanks so much for your time again.
Thanks, Nick.
Interesting stuff as ever from James Willoughby in the Thoroughbred Racing Commentary Global Rankings. Rich, what do you make of Magical on top of Gayath now?
I find it hard to swallow.
because I think Gayath has put up better performances this season than Magical has, and she's only come to the party in the Irish Champion Stakes at something close to her best. And I don't believe that Gayath was at his best in that race, and I think he suffered. And it's only, I think, his fault, and to the credit of Magical, that she put him under pressure, and he did just seem to wilt a little bit. Not as much as some people may have suggested, because he did battle on okay. But she was just a bit stronger than him. But I just don't think he was at his absolute best. And in my own personal rankings for 2020, I would still have Gayath above Magical. I think he's proven more this season with his overall performances than she has.
But those are your 2020 personal performance rankings rather than global rankings taking stock of our whole career. So James's point is like golf rankings or tennis rankings. These are rankings, not ratings.
Indeed they are, yeah. If it was an overall career collection of performances, I'd have Magical ahead of Gayath, because she has been the most wonderful race mare overall over a longer period of time, as has Enable, which is why she's so high in the rankings. But certainly in my 2020 rankings, if I had to choose a horse that had achieved more this year, it would be Gayath.
What about your rankings for Friday, September the 18th, who comes out top?
Strong rankings today, Lucky. Really strong. A race that I think is close to both our hearts, the Haynes, Hansen and Clark
condition. Nick Clark was on the show yesterday, the sponsor.
In all seriousness, I mean, what a magnificent sponsorship. 40-year anniversary of a race that has been a magnificent guide to horses of the future. And I really like McGallan. Really, really fancy McGallan. I think he's a really smart horse. He won well first time up at Newmarket. He dropped back to 7 furlongs on the all weather from a wide draw and finished second, obviously giving away weight with a penalty. And I think even Frankie said afterwards that he rode him with a bit too much confidence and thought he would pick up the winner. So he probably should be unbeaten. Martin Harley, who rides him today, was aboard when he won first time at Newmarket, so no probs there. And I think he could turn out to be very, very smart, McGallan.
Rishi, thank you very much indeed. Thank you very much for listening as well. Don't forget, if you do enjoy this program, please give us a rating, review us and subscribe, because then it'll just pop up on your device automatically. And you can do that on SoundCloud, on Spotify, on iTunes, of course, and on Google. We will be back after the weekend. But once again this week, we will leave you with one of Pat Smullen's great moments in the saddle. We'll see you on Monday. Bye-bye.
North Light, who drew alongside Rule of Law, takes the lead now. Here's Grey Swallow on the outside, moving up to the favourite. They've got a furlong left to go. Grey Swallow on the near side now, gets his neck in front. North Light fighting back, but Grey Swallow, it's a triumph for Pat Smullen and do it well. Grey Swallow wins the Derby. In second there is North Light, tight third, Tycoon and Rule of Law.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.